What to expect when Wall Street's expecting.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. It's time for the Morning Open, when we check in on business and the economy as Wall Street begins the trading day. You know how we say a company's earnings beat expectations? I'll ask whose expectations and why should you care? Also, OPEC says don't pay us too much for a barrel of oil. We'll find out why in a moment. But first, where's Wall Street? The S&P 500 is down 0.3% this morning. The NASDAQ and the Dow are both off about 0.2%. So the Dow is down 23 points. It's at 10,068. European stock prices have been swinging this morning. They're down 0.25% now. Asian markets were mostly higher earlier in the day. Now, what's behind some of those numbers? Say hello to analyst Julie Nieman at Smith Moore & Company. She's with us live from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Bill.
So a bunch of big corporations reported earnings this morning, and what do you know? They all beat Wall Street's expectations. Pfizer, DuPont, Coca-Cola, even the heavy equipment maker Caterpillar said profits fell 53%, but that beat expectations. So why are expectations so low, and should we even care?
Well, I know it's shocking, but analysts have been dead wrong for the last 2 years in where earnings are going. Usually they get good guidance from companies, and the companies help them figure out what profit margins are and kind of guide them along here. Well, basically what it's come down to now is that everybody is on the hugely negative side because they missed it on the upside, and they're shooting very low. So we have most of the corporations coming in, keeping expectations low. So if it comes in better than expected, you get a pop in the stock.
I see. Well, speaking of which, Caterpillar, we mentioned, their stock is up 5% this morning. What does a global industrial company have going for it these days?
This is where you're going to see the recovery first, because first of all, the emerging markets and the commodities-based economies did not suffer the big recession that the rest of us have, and they're in an infrastructure build-out period. And so companies like Caterpillar are selling to them, and that's why you're going to see earnings recover there first. Plus, you've got a cheap dollar, which makes us wonderfully affordable to the rest of the world.
Now, oil keeps on climbing. It crossed $80 a barrel overnight, but OPEC came out and said, we don't want to charge more than $100. Why would they say that?
Oh, and this time last year, OPEC was saying we don't want to charge $150 or $200 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're looking at the fact that demand destruction is real here. It's not based on fundamentals where the price of oil is. Industrial countries still are seeing dropping in demand. So the oil price is moving in because it's hot money looking for returns. You're going to see a correction in here because energy costs are still down, gasoline down 5.5%, heating oil down 10%. This recession is not over for energy. You're looking at demand destruction here.
Very interesting. Julie Nieman at Smith Moore & Company, live from St. Louis. Thank you, Julie.
You bet.
In other news, President Obama heads to New York today. He'll be headlining two Democratic fundraisers tonight at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel. Now, these events are usually attended by a who's who of Wall Street, but only about a third of the donors coming to dinner tonight will be from the financial industry. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson explains.
If you're a politician and you need money, Wall Street is a good place to start, especially when you've just delivered the street billions in bailout money. But for the recipients of that money, it's all about appearances, and appearing to give a thank you check to a politician doesn't help on Main Street. Brad Hintz is a banking analyst with Sanford Bernstein.
Wall Street is looking at what is in the best interests of Wall Street. So if they gauge donations as causing more problems for them than providing them an opportunity, they're not going to give donations.
According to the New York Times, Wall Street contributions make up just 3% of Democratic Party fundraising this year, compared with 6% last year.
It's not that they're angry at the Obama administration. It's actually that they're afraid that this will throw gasoline on the fire.
For his part, Hintz, who is the former CFO of Lehman Brothers, doesn't plan to attend either fundraiser tonight. He says he likes to stay out of politics. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
You're listening to Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, October 20th at marketplace.org. The giant military contractor Lockheed Martin reports its third quarter earnings today. It is a tough business environment for Pentagon contractors like Lockheed. Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale tells us why.
The Pentagon's been spending less on conventional weapons and more on what's called irregular warfare. That's where soldiers become like cops on the beat to defeat insurgencies and keep the peace. So the Defense Department has less use for outside contractors.
You end up with a lot more soldiers and a lot less arms.
Military analyst Paul Nisbet at JSA Research says makers of big weapon systems face leaner times.
We'll see a downturn eventually to the point where the industry is going to have to shrink a bit.
On the chopping block are Lockheed fighter planes, as well as tanks and ships made by other large defense contractors. But lawyer Sam Gadansky says they're adapting.
In order to offset the loss of income on big-ticket items, they've been acquiring smaller companies that are more focused on information technology, on items that troops in the streets really need.
This month, Congress considers a Pentagon budget with more money for soldiers and less for large weapons. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Hasta la vista. Microsoft is about to replace its much-maligned Windows Vista operating system with Windows 7, which goes on sale later this week. So, will the new bells and whistles for Windows help boost sluggish PC sales? Our senior business correspondent Bob Moon has been looking into that.
Tonight only, in celebration of the release of Windows 95.
A decade and a half ago, crowds lined up for the new Windows at Midnight Madness sales nationwide.
You can get your copy of Windows 95 while they're still stock.
Microsoft can only hope its latest Windows launch makes a splash more like that over the yawn that met Windows Vista in 2007. The PC market counts on new Windows versions to spur sales, but Gartner researcher Steve Kleinhans remembers how Vista wasn't ready in time to lure in holiday shoppers.
Windows 7 is incredibly well-timed. It's arriving just as we see the economy starting to pick up and right in time for Christmas sales.
So what could go wrong?
Today, I don't think people are really all that excited about operating systems.
Kleinhans says the new software won't make old computers and other hardware obsolete as much as past releases did.
The operating system has become less of a driver in the sense of requiring people to move to a new platform.
PC sales are starting to bounce back, but they could use some sizzle. Sales of Macs have bounced back stronger. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
China is currently the king of the auto industry, not just in vehicle sales, but production. Today, China announced its 10 millionth car rolled off the assembly line. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
Before today, only Japan and the U.S. assembled 10 million vehicles in a single year. China did it in just over 9 months. By contrast, U.S. auto plants this year have cranked out just 4 million units. China, in fact, is tops in two categories, world's top producer and consumer this year, thanks in part to government purchase incentives. Those will end, just as cash for clunkers did. Still, analyst Jerry Huang at CSM Worldwide doesn't see China's auto market breaking down.
The customers in mid-sized cars or SUVs, they don't care about the government incentive or subsidy. So there are still plenty of customers in China which will buy their cars next year.
Top sellers in China are Hyundai, Nissan, and Volkswagen, along with Chinese brand BYD. Huang says China's emerging consumers are just now trading up and replacing their first cars, which gives rise to a brand new job description in China, the used car salesman. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
One of the best-selling book genres the last couple of decades has been what they call chick lit. You've seen these books, pink high heel on the cover, the stories about shopping for the perfect man and the perfect shoes to go with him. Marketplace's Eve Tro says lately the prime audience for these books is not feeling so sure-footed.
It started with Bridget Jones and her diary.
Daily call from Jude, best friend, head of investment at Breitling's Bank, who spends most of her time trapped in the ladies' toilet crying over boyfriend.
The 1996 book was a bestseller. The 2001 movie grossed more than $280 million. By 2006, the New York Times Review of Books declared a chick-lit pandemic. Books like Confessions of a Shopaholic and In Her Shoes sold millions of copies. The 30-something heroines with their high-paying jobs and high-limit credit cards spent their way through their troubles. Now, the recession's hit, and the ladies of Chick Lit are feeling the pinch. Publishers Weekly deputy editor Jonathan Segura says the stories have to change.
To not address it as one thing, but to have a book that sort of flies in the face of what's actually happening is a whole thing altogether.
Author Sarah Bilston wrote Sleepless Nights last year. It's about a corporate lawyer juggling work and a new baby. Before it was released in the U.S. this summer,
I read the first page again, having not read it for about 4 months, and my heart sank.
It described a glitzy party with people talking about lavish vacations.
By about page 200, my head was in my hands.
Bilston rewrote whole chapters of the book. Wall Street lawyers traded swagger for anxiety. The heroine's choice between work and family got harder.
When difficulties strike, characters do have to think on their feet, and I think it makes them actually a lot more vibrant.
Another author, Sarah Strohmeyer, didn't have to rewrite. She saw disaster coming and wrote The Penny Pinchers Club.
People weren't at jobs earning enough to make the mortgage payments. You knew something had to give.
Her heroine starts buying in bulk and dumpster diving. Strohmeyer says Chick Lit is really about strong women, not just glamour. And a job loss or foreclosure gives those women a chance to triumph.
First thing you're going to do if you're a true Chick Lit person is you're going to say, I can do it. All I have to do is get myself looking good, get my friends, and figure out how we're going to handle this. And somewhere along the way, you're going to meet some guy.
A new catchphrase to describe these stories is already bubbling up. Recessionista Lit. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
The Kaiser Family Foundation will hold a briefing today on what it is calling the sleeper issue of the healthcare overhaul. Bills in the House and Senate that would let you pay for long-term care through voluntary payroll deductions. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer says the plan would shift some of the burden of paying for long-term care from the government to individuals.
The legislation is called the Community Living Assistance Services and Supports Act, or the CLASS Act. Workers would agree to a payroll deduction of $123 per month. After contributing for 5 years, they could start drawing benefits. Paul Vandewater is an economist with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He says the legislation would help people better afford long-term care.
You know, give people a widely recognized, easier way of starting to make provision for their own future needs.
Kind of like Social Security, except it would be voluntary. And there's the rub.
People, frankly, are just not planning that far ahead.
J.C. Scott is a lobbyist for the insurance industry. He says it would be hard to get young, healthy people to participate. And Scott says the CLASS Act wouldn't pay for itself and would eventually be short hundreds of billions of dollars. Economist Vandewater says premium hikes would keep the program solvent. Not a perfect plan, he says, but better than no plan at all. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And finally, why people break up is none of your business. A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit by Continental Airlines accusing 9 pilots of getting sham divorces. The airline claims the pilots split up just so their ex-spouses could collect their retirement benefits while the pilots kept flying, and the airline says some of them hid the divorces from their kids and their friends and then remarried their spouses after getting the money. The judge said, maybe so, but he told the airline, you cannot consider the reason for the divorce when you're deciding whether to pay those benefits. This is Marketplace Morning Report. The Dow is down 24 points. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.